Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world. And now your hosts, Yog and Manish.
Aligning marketing and sales to driving revenue. That's what we are going to be discussing in today's episode. This is me, your host, Yagnishwaran Ganesh.
And this is Manish Nepal.
All right. So today we have a very interesting guest someone who is very passionate about revenue marketing. And he is someone who helps B2B organizations optimize revenue growth by aligning marketing and sales. And he's also the founder and principal of JD2 Consulting. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you, gents. I appreciate you for having me on the show. Really excited about our conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jeff, can you take us through your journey of how you came into revenue marketing and how do you like to look at yourself and your journey a little bit?
Sure. So I look at myself as a speaker, a consultant, and then the author of the award-winning new book, Create Togetherness. So I specialize in helping business-to-business or B2B companies achieve optimal revenue growth by strategically aligning their marketing sales teams and making sure they're on the same page. So really my story began early in the part of my career when I was in sales, actually. I was in healthcare sales for many years, had the opportunity, worked really, really hard to get to the top 5% of the sales force, which is not easy, especially in a large corporation, and was able to actually maintain that position for quite some time. We in healthcare sales in the U.S. at least had some really significant regulation changes seemingly overnight. And so a lot of the strategies and the tactics I used to become successful pretty much were off the table. And so what I found next, which is my worst fear, is that my numbers started to drop, my market share started to drop, and I had a knee-jerk reaction that most salespeople do and still do, and is totally a viable response, is that I just did more of everything. And so I started writing more emails, I started calling more people, I started setting up more meetings. I literally, jokingly say I was the stalker in the parking lot that was like, waiting for my customer who were physicians and hospital administrators to come out so I could talk to them. It was kind of desperate. But what I found in doing all of that is that, after a couple quarters, my numbers really didn't change. And many of them, in some cases for the other products, continued to decline. And I was just super, super, super frustrated because I was like, wait a second. This has worked for me for so long. What happened? Did I just become a terrible sales rep overnight? Like, what's going on? And so I had a really interesting conversation, interaction with our director of marketing at the time, and they recognized that sales was kind of going through it, right? And so they had developed a tool that basically looked at all of the data in our territories and was able to help us understand and see where the opportunities were. And not only did it help us understand, where we had the highest likelihood of winning with our customers, but it also gave us the language and what to focus on in those interactions so that we could really connect in a meaningful way with our target buyers, our target customers. And it was a game changer. And what I realized in that conversation was I would have never had the time, expertise, knowledge, know-how to be able to do the analysis that marketing did, right? And so that's when it hit me. I said, the sales and marketing relationship is super powerful if we really understand the value that we bring to each other. And in that moment was really my aha moment. I said, when companies get this right and when I get this right, it's a really, really powerful combo that neither one of us would have been able to achieve on our own. And so literally within, I would say a quarter or two, my number started to increase and get better because I really took to heart the tool that the marketing team gave us out in the field. And I'm telling you, I used it every day and the results were remarkable. So fast forward, I've had the opportunity to be in sales roles, marketing roles, business development roles, all the way from Fortune 100 companies down to early stage startups. And it is a theme that I've seen in every industry, every organization, every role that I have been in, that there tends to be a misalignment between marketing and sales. And so I truly am passionate about helping these two functions these two parts of the organization understand the value they bring each other. I would almost say I'm on a crusade to fix this relationship. And so this is why I started my company several years ago, really to develop thought leadership so that, you know, sales leaders, marketing leaders, CEOs of B2B companies could really be thoughtful about this particular issue and have some guidance and a framework in order to begin their transformation to aligning sales and marketing across the organization.
Wow, that's a fantastic story. And I so resonate to what you just said because, you know, I personally also started my career in sales and I eventually came into marketing after 3 or 4 years of, you know, my sales experience. So, I totally resonate with you when you say marketing and sales were not really aligned and it's an age-old problem. So, let's try to quantify that or probably look at this problem statement. So, what in your experience was, the cost of not transforming marketing and sales into a relationship that is well aligned with one another?
Yeah. So when you, and I talk about it in my book, Create Togetherness. So when you look at quantifying the cost of misalignment or the cost of inaction, as I sometimes call it, it's extremely high, but very much like a cancer, it can eat at the core of your business and you not notice until it's too late. And you have to make major changes or pivot really, really quickly because it's starting to eat at the core of your business. And so there really are kind of two sides to the coin when you look at the cost of inaction. There are the economic or financial costs, and then there's also the cultural cost to the business. So let's start with the economic financial. So there's data that shows us when you really peel back the onion and when you're talking about the cost of in action, you're really talking about the hit to sales and marketing productivity. And so there was one study by Marketo and ReachForce that showed that the hit to sales productivity and wasted marketing spend actually can cost a company up to $1 trillion, which seems like a really big number because obviously like I could buy Apple with the amount of money that it costs. But when you think about it more thoughtfully, the fact that sales is so distracted and trying to do all these things that potentially marketing could help them with, entering CRM data, doing research, trying to get insights, trying to be on social media, all these things, these are non-revenue generating activities. So InsideSales.com had some data that looked at sales reps productivity and they said now it's down to 36.6% of a sales rep's time is actually spent on selling or revenue generating activities. So the rest of that, right, which is a huge chunk of time, is spent on non-revenue activities or just not selling. So as a CEO, as a sales leader, I am really concerned because I have my salespeople. They're smart. I've hired them. I pay them good money. And majority of their time is actually not spent selling. On the other side of that, right, you have marketing that's working really hard, very well paid. They're doing a lot of activities and strategies to produce leads for sales. And we have data now that shows us up, depending on the industry and the organization, you can have upwards between 80 and 90% of marketing generated leads going untouched. So actually ignored. So you put those two things together of sales not having a lot of time to sell and marketing producing all of this content and resources to get leads that don't get looked at or don't get touched. And then you can start to see the impact of your ability not to really understand how important this particular subject is and really the cost of inaction. And that's just the economic, side of the coin. So then when you look at the cultural impact of misalignment, there are a lot of things that just create a culture and environment that people don't really thrive in. So when you don't have a good relationship between sales and marketing, they tend not to trust each other. And when people don't trust each other, they really come to the table really trying to present the case to protect them and make sure that they look okay. And so I had a great conversation with a CEO in the past, and we were talking about this. And he said he just got to the point where he was so frustrated because marketing would come in during a quarterly business review and give him this whole thing about like, yep, we have all these MQLs, we've done these programs, we're doing really, really great. You know, the conference we just went to, we've increased marketing qualified leads by 15%, et cetera. Everything's great, we're doing good, we're excited. And then sales would come right in afterwards and present and say, we're down across the board, we're not hitting quota, the leads we're getting are terrible. It's just everything is a mess, right? And he was like, I'm confused. How do you have two people that are essentially working on solving the same problem, which is generating revenue for the business, come up with two completely different stories, two completely different perspectives, all with, you know, the same resources? This doesn't make sense. So at the end of the day, the cost of inaction really is twofold. The economic portion of it with, you know, as I said before, with the ReachForge data, upwards of $1 trillion in lost sales productivity and marketing, a wasted marketing spend. And even IDC shows us that you know, to make things a little bit easier to kind of swallow, that they estimate that, you know, alone, just looking at the misalignment issue, you're looking at 10% of your revenue is going to a misalignment between sales and marketing. And then the second, as I said before, is that cultural component where you just have a lack of trust. People aren't working together and that sort of thing. And it just creates an environment where people aren't at their best. So that truly, in a nutshell, really is the cost of inaction or the cost of continuing to have this misalignment issue between marketing and sales.
Wow, that's really some insight. That sounds really incredible. Now, Jeff, it sounds like, you know, the inspiration of you writing this book, Create Togetherness, was partly inspired by your personal experience of being on the sales side, as well as seeing the world from the other side of the fence. And you obviously also interact with a lot of sales and marketing leaders in your day-to-day life. You consult with businesses. You interact with CEOs from B2B companies and all that. So I think people listening to this podcast can really, you know, understand this problem, how big this problem is, if we can be a little more specific. So my question to you is, in your experience, what are two or three of the biggest misalignments that is very obvious between the marketing and sales team, but they are hidden in plain sight? Can you give us some examples from your personal experience so that, you know, we can understand this topic a little better?
Yeah, sure. So I think the one that I see the most often is not having the same answer to who our target audience is. I have literally sat down with the head of sales and head of marketing and asked that question and gotten two different answers. So that to me is a red flag. And so that goes into, we've got to step back for 2 seconds and really have a joint conversation about who our ICP is or our ideal customer profile. Many times in the B2B context, depending on the organization, again, marketing is the one that develops the ICP and puts marketing content, programs, marketing motions behind that, but doesn't really communicate that to sales in a meaningful way and or does not invite them to the table to be a part of co-creating that ICP. The ICP is something that is not should not be a stagnant document. It's a living, breathing thing because obviously with, you know, a lot of things that the world is going through, those may change or modify. So that's one I see very, very often. And I mean, being very specific about here is the ICP that, you know, develops the most profit. So it's not a lot of times when you talk about ICPs on the sales side, it's who we can get in front of the easiest, right? Because, you know, obviously salespeople want to talk to people, but really it's stepping back and saying what type of accounts are the most profitable for us? So it is an economic exercise, not purely, you know, who do we want to talk to? So that's one that I see very, very often. I would say the other one is I had a conversation with a marketing leader and I asked a question. They were like, you know, we're aligned, we're doing really, really good. It's not something that we need to address. And I asked the question, you know, what either pieces of collateral or marketing activities are driving the most closed deals? Not MQLs, but actual closed deals. And there was a silence. Because that's a question that you have to be aligned across the entire buyer's journey to be able to answer. And then that really started the conversation of us understanding how you develop an end-to-end process. Because the sales and marketing leaders should be able to meet on a regular basis and look at complete pipeline and be able to tell what marketing motions are actually leading to closed deals. So that I would say that's probably the second one I see. And then thirdly, really simply just not understanding what they're doing on the other side of the silo, right? I had a keynote speaking opportunity a couple years ago. And the gentleman ran up to me afterwards. I was a little concerned. I was like, this is either really great or really bad, or I don't know what's going on. But he was like, you know, thank you for your presentation. I really appreciate you changing my perspective of how I should be interacting with marketing. He said, the only problem and the challenge I have is I am a sales leader. I've grown up in sales. You know, I'm quote unquote a sales guy. I get along with my marketing colleague. We're completely fine. But I don't know the first thing to ask them about what to do differently. And so that's why I see a lot of times when I talk about this dysfunctional relationship between sales and marketing, it's not always that they hate each other. And I going into this thought that like sales and marketing are at war and they hate each other. And there's some instances where I've seen that to be true. But more often than not, I found that they lack empathy, they lack understanding, and they don't know how to leverage each other in a business relationship, not a personal relationship, but a business relationship, so that they're both more successful and more effective at achieving their goals and objectives. So I would say those are probably the three. So ideal customer profile, not understanding how to work with each other, and then also just not being clear on what the other one is doing. So those are probably the three challenges I see the most.
I think that's really helpful. I think those are some of the common pain points that we have also experienced from the marketing side of things. But before we go on to our next question, let us take a moment to thank our sponsors, which is Jest.is. People who have been following the ABM Conversation podcast and LinkedIn might be aware that we have recently partnered with Jest.is, and they are our first sponsor to the podcast. And Jest.is is on a mission to add value to the marketing community. For the uninitiated, Jest.is is a marketing content stream that sits on your Google Chrome browser as a new tab extension. It is a submission platform that curates high-quality articles, podcasts, infographics, videos, and ebooks. Its AI-powered algorithms allow you to handpick your own personalized content feed that is specific to your taste.
Right. And as marketers and content creators, Manish and I have also used Zest at least 1,000 times, we would say, and we keep using it, both to promote our content to like-minded marketing communities, as well as to find great marketing-related content pieces. And if you are, as a listener, wanting to boost your high-quality content to an elite community of marketers, then go ahead and sign up at zest.is/contentboost. And just let them know that you're coming from ABM Conversations, and you will get 75% off on your first boost. So, all right, getting back to this conversation, Jeff. Would you say, talking about empathy, talking about the relationship between these two, would you say that there are any specific steps to transform the relationship between marketing and sales? Or, you know, how do we move the brick from moment to moment? Are there any specific steps that will get us to a stage where both of them are aligned?
I think you have to start with an audit of where you are, what's the state of the union today, and you know, whether you use someone outside the organization to come in to do and have an objective view. That's what we do on our side of the fence here. We actually provide a objective assessment of the sales and marketing relationship and your ability to work together. I think it starts there, right? So we can have a true state of the union, and that should be based on data, not just people's feelings and that sort of thing, but really looking at the end-to-end process to see what's working, what's not working, and then, you know, really have everybody come to the table and say, okay, this is something that is really negatively impacting our business and we need to take seriously. I would say the very next second step would be getting CEO sponsorship. And I don't mean just support, but I mean actual sponsorship, where you make the business case to the CEO of why aligning sales and marketing is a strategic advantage and should be looked at as a business imperative or a business priority. And the reason I say that it's important, I've actually had conversations with potential clients, and one of my filters to see whether or not an engagement makes sense is there CEO sponsorship? Because what I know is if you go into this transformation, this is not something that you do over a week or two. You are entering into a process that is transforming the way that the business operates, and is having people look at things differently. And many people have been entrenched in the way that they look at sales and marketing and being two different siloed environments. So you have to have the CEO on board at the top really touting that this is something that the organization is taking seriously. This is the way that we're operating. This is the way we're moving forward. And that sales and marketing are just going to have to start to see themselves as one aligned revenue engine. And why that is so important is that you have, no offense to middle managers, but you have a lot of folks that are entrenched in, the fiefdom that they've created and the way that they've done it. And they've been successful for 20 plus years or whatever that scenario is in their brain. And they are just not really on board. And in order for you to be able to, move the Titanic, so to say, you have to have that voiceover and that support from the CEO. So I say CEO sponsorship is absolutely necessary as the second step. And then we go into what I call the three pillars of alignment transformation, which I think are the foundation of any transformation on the looking at B2B sales marketing coming together. And I talk about this in detail in the book, so I won't go into all of the nuances and that sort of thing, but I lay it out in the book. And that's data, process, and communication. So when I looked at all of the things that needed to be done, and there are many, right? This is, again, not something that happens overnight. I wanted to kind of frame, build a framework for people to be able to think about this in a meaningful way where they could sit down at the table and start having a conversation. And so when you look at the data pillar is saying that we can't really have fruitful conversations if we're not looking at the same reality. And so we have to really start to look at the marketing data and sales data into one pool. And so we have to create a single source of truth so we can know what reality is and how are we interacting with customers, what's working, what's not working. Until you do that, you honestly are looking at two different realities. I always say it's like a sales leader with one hand over their eye trying to figure out the whole story. You only have half the story. So you can't really see what's going on. The second one is the process pillar. And the process pillar is all about developing an end-to-end process so that the sales marketing leader can sit down and actually see what's going on and how everything is interconnected. So we are not operating in this kind of old school, stepwise, linear process anymore. The modern buyer is empowered with way too much information. So they come in and out of the sales process or the revenue generation process when and where they want to. So in order for us to be able to develop this overall customer experience that they're demanding, we've got to be able to see everything. So from that first touch of marketing collateral all the way to actual close. And then we'll be able to optimize and change things and modify because we'll have the whole story and not just half the story. And then third, I would argue maybe the most important is the third pillar, which is communication. And that's all about actually developing formalized feedback loops between sales and marketing so that we can start to leverage the tribal knowledge or the tribal intelligence of all the teams. And you could even put customer success in there if you have that particular team. And it is really the most important part of that is the formalization of that process. Many times you have information being shared from marketing to sales, but that information, that feedback, and that voice of the customer, because sales is the people that are interacting with customers on a daily basis, doesn't funnel back up to marketing in a meaningful way. And if it comes straight from sales management, sometimes it gets scrubbed and you miss some of the nuance and the rawness of what's going on. And so that's the third pillar of really having a formalized feedback process. And that can look like weekly growth team meetings. That can be the marketing leader or the marketing team member sitting on calls with salespeople. But it has to be a formalized process so that you have a really robust way of getting that intelligence to the marketing and even product teams to be able to adjust strategy accordingly.
Right, right. So, Ben, looking at the things that you said, a lot of this also has quite a bit of dependency on technology. And if you look at things from that perspective, in fact, a lot of people also tend to believe that if you have the right kind of technology, then we can sort a lot of these alignment issues. So is technology a solution for everything? Or like, what is your take on that when it comes to the alignment perspective?
So my simple answer is no. Because I get asked this question all the time. And there are a ton of amazing vendors out there. Like, don't get me wrong, right? Like the sales and marketing tech landscape is exploding. Actually, Scott Brinker came out with the new marketing, I'm calling it the marketing 20 million. Right. Like it continues to leapfrog every year. But the simple answer is no. And I say that because we got to think about this. Who is operating the technology that we use in our corporations? It's people. So misalignment is about people. You've got to change the people first. I don't care how good a technology is. If the people using it don't have the right intent, don't understand why they're using it and don't use it in the right way that is aligned to some overall strategy, it's not going to work. And that has nothing to do with the ability of the tool, the ability of the technology. It's about us not having a strategy that is aligned and going into it in the right way. And then I would argue also on top of that, that we sometimes don't talk about enough, and I also talk about this in the book, is that, you know, the real value and the real gold that we get from technology is not the bells and whistles and not the, what it allows us to do. It's the data that we get out of the tool that is the most valuable. And if you're not capturing that data, you're not developing that data into insights and making smart, educated decisions, you're not really optimizing the use of that technology. So I say all of that, technology is great, but if you think that you're going to throw technology at the misalignment issue, which we have done for years, if not decades, it's not going to work.
I totally agree, Jeff. I am also of a strong belief that changing your mindset is more important than embracing a new technology or throwing money at your problems, because at the end of the day, it is only going to, you know, expand your problem horizon instead of solving that. So yeah, totally with you on that.
And to that, just not to, sorry to interrupt you, but I was at a conference and I thought this statement was really great. And the gentleman on stage, and I forgot who it was, talked about the fact that if you have a broken revenue engine, so you have a broken process between marketing and sales, and you just have bad relationships, all technology does is accelerates you failing faster, right? Like if the car is broken, if the transmission is broken and you put new technology in, it's just going to break down faster. So technology does not fix broken processes or broken strategies. It just doesn't.
Absolutely true. Absolutely. So I have to make a confession at this point, Jeff. When I first I first heard about you in another podcast of Douglas Burdett, the Growth Marketing Podcast.
Love yes.
That guy. I'm a big fan of that podcast. But had I not come across you and your book mentioned in that podcast, if I had casually come across your book on Amazon.com, for example, and if I had taken the book's title at its face value, I would have thought Create Togetherness is some sort of book about, rekindling relationship between two spouses or something. It sounded like a very romantic title, but thankfully to that podcast, and again, while Yag was researching his own things when he was working on his revenue marketing book, your name came up again and again, and that's how we decided to bring you as a guest to this podcast. And thankfully, because of those things, I knew what the book content was all about. But here's my question to you.
Sure.
I know that the book that you wrote is specifically for marketing and sales leader to coach them on how to change the mindset and change the strategy and culture to make this misalignment between sales and marketing team work. But from an individual marketing standpoint, take me for an example, right? I'm an individual marketer that doesn't have an influence on the processes of an organization. I'm just an individual contributor to the team. So from the standpoint of a person like me or my crossover colleague from sales team, how can we create togetherness between the two teams if, say, leadership is not involved, or if, say, we don't want leadership to handle us to do that? What can we do from our individual capacity?
So first of all, I want to address the fact that you thought the title was not a business book. And so that was actually done intentional. It was a little bit of a risk, right? Like my whole platform, what I argue is that I want to get us out of focusing on processes and technologies and focus on the people. And so I had a really great interaction on the podcast, my podcast, thealignmentpodcast.com, with a psychologist, Deborah Mashick. And she talked about collaboration and the psychology of collaboration. And that conversation really got me thinking about, I want to humanize this idea of aligning sales and marketing and just not make it about aligning to business functions and breaking down silos. Because what we're doing is we are trying to change the hearts and minds of people that historically have not worked together in a meaningful way, in the right way. And so I think we have to approach that from a little bit of a unique standpoint. So A, I'm glad you found me. B, it was a risk. But I think as people start to understand kind of my message and the spirit behind it, it starts to make a little sense. So I'll start there. And thanks to Douglas for having me on the show and you being able to find me and all that sort of things. All those things help with my SEO. So to answer your real question, it's a great question. So from the individual contributor standpoint, and I've been in that situation, right? Like I was there before, you know, I started this platform and wrote the book. I think it comes down to increasing your knowledge about how you can leverage your counterpart to help you be more effective. And one of the things that I wish I would have known as a sales rep early in my career was to reach out to marketing just to ask what they do and how I can help them. Because what I found is when I learned to do that later in my career, they have resources and access to things that will help you be more effective and be more productive at your job. It could be simple things as looking at the type of information they share on the website or third-party sites and sharing that with your potential prospect. We know a lot of the spirit and intent around social selling is positioning yourself as a thought leader, as an expert with domain expertise. As a salesperson, or a sales leader, I should say, I don't want my sales rep spending hours looking at the best articles and digging into the thought leadership and reading white papers. And yeah, there should be some of that. But if a sales rep can leverage what marketing is already doing and saying like, hey, we found this new white paper, adding a little commentary to it and then sharing it to their network or sharing it on LinkedIn or whatever social platform they find, I feel like things like that will put you above your peers. And in addition to that, what I found is that when you look at really the most successful sales reps, they find ways to do that anyway. They're very resourceful. They look at what's out there. They're providing value. They're not just going through a script and sending emails, rote emails based on the playbook they've gotten. They're really thinking about the holistic picture of how they add value. And I think that marketing has a ton of resources and content and ability that you can kind of piggyback on and repackage in a way that helps you further the conversation with your target buyers or your prospects.
Right. Brilliant. And, you know, because we are talking about this sense of, you know, togetherness and in the way marketing and sales teams can collaborate, let me, flip the switch for a minute and think from the other side. In a sense, like, let's think of it from an end user standpoint or a buyer standpoint from the outside, right? So marketing and sales teams give totally two different experiences. And when these two can collaborate together, what kind of approach or what kind of a difference in approach can marketing and sales bring together so that they can get the attention of the modern buyer in a much better way and probably make sure that the experience on the whole is quite seamless?
Yeah, at the end of the day, on B2B, it's all about experiences. I talk about the kind of Netflix examples that you know, in our personal lives outside of work, we have these really amazing customer experience. You sit down on Netflix, you turn it on, it knows who you are. And then, you know, it tells you, hey, these are the top trending movies that you would be interested in. It learns what you like to see. And so you can get to what you're trying to achieve, which is, you know, entertainment, much quicker, much faster without going through the complete catalog of what Netflix has to offer, which I think last time I look was like over 5,000 titles, like, right? Like, I don't want to go through all that. You have Zappos, you have Amazon, you know, you could be sitting on the deck and maybe a light bulb goes out or something and you say, hey, we need to buy it again. You might do a little Google search. You may ask a couple friends, like, what's the best product I should buy? And then, you know, relatively within minutes, you're able to purchase that through Amazon really quickly. So what happens is we have this weird thing that we've done that we think that people, you know, come out of that experience in their personal lives and then come to work and find that this really cumbersome process that has these friction points that are not really necessary, they're going to be okay with that. And it's just not the case. We're not putting up with it anymore. Buyers aren't putting up with it anymore. And so they are expecting the same type of experiences that they are seeing outside of work, the B2C side of things, as they want to see at work. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that somebody's going to buy something off of Twitter, but they want the process to be easy to navigate. And so what we have to realize on the B2B side of the house is that the modern buyer doesn't care if it's coming from sales, doesn't care if it's coming from marketing. They don't care. They just want the information when they want it, and they want you to make it easier for them to make a decision about what's right for them. Case in point, I love this one. I had downloaded some research for an upcoming keynote and was kind of going through just to kind of get a third-party perspective. And I think within like 2 minutes, a sales rep called me and said, oh, we noticed that you downloaded some information on the website. You know, what were you looking, what were your problems that you're dealing with? And I just thought it was the weirdest interaction because I was like, I'm in the middle of reading the white paper, which of course you know the title. I hope you, maybe you don't. Maybe marketing didn't give it to you. I hope you know what I'm reading. And it just really was this weird, like I was like, I'm doing research and like you caught me off guard and I don't know what's going on. So, you know, had he approached me with, you know, we noticed that you downloaded, you know, white paper XYZ, stereotypically, you know, organizations that look like you are dealing with one of three issues. Are any of these the ones that you were looking for more clarity on? Let's have a conversation. That is completely different because you have some type of insight, intel to share with me and hopefully can engage in a conversation than just saying like, hey, what do you need? We saw that you downloaded something. So you hit the nail on the head. Experiences is experience. Customer experience, CX, is everything nowadays. And the modern B2B buyer is just raising your hand and saying like, if you can't figure this out, we're going to go to somebody else. We're not going to buy from you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love this very specific example about the ebook or the white paper that you said, because this is also something that I've spoken in my book as well. In a sense, I look at it more from the relationship between marketing and sales here. Because like, say, for example, the moment somebody downloads an ebook and a marketing guy is going to pass over this to the sales guy as a lead, an interest in downloading an ebook is definitely not equal to interest in the product. And there starts the misunderstanding or mistrust between these two parties. So yeah, love this example from both perspectives. So yeah, we are you know, coming towards the end of our episode today. So we both loved you know, what we discussed overall, and there are quite a bit of takeaways. So yeah, if many of our listeners, they tend to come back and ask us, and they love to connect with our guests. So if somebody wants to connect with you, what's the best way to find you? If somebody wants to work with you, what's the best way? Can you just share a little bit about how to find and how to go on with you?
Sure, absolutely. So the easiest way to find me is my website, which is meetjeffdavis.com. That's M-E-E-T, jeffdavis.com. I am also extremely active on LinkedIn. Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We just got on Facebook a couple weeks ago. And my handle is, for all of those, is Meet Jeff Davis. So whether it be LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and then now Facebook, you can find me there. Also encourage you, if you're interested in reading my new book, Create Togetherness, that the website is createtogethernessbook.com. createtogethernessbook.com. And then last but not least, thank you guys again for having me on the podcast. I have very similar conversations on the alignmentpodcast.com. We're talking about all things alignment between marketing and sales and products and customer success. And we're talking to domain experts as well as those within the organization of how you actually move the needle with something like that. So again, I hope you will find me on those particular channels. If you remember nothing else, meetjeffdavis.com. And then you can link to everything from that website.
Lovely. And Meet Jeff Davis is also, you know, very easy to remember as well. So yeah, if there is something that you'd like to share with our audience as a parting note, that'll be really wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, especially right now with what, you know, and I don't know exactly when this will air, but you know, what the world is going through right now, I think that we have to focus on revenue optimization. And that is really what aligning marketing and sales is all about, right? At the end of the day. And so I encourage those leaders that, you know, may be struggling with a pipeline that is not moving as quickly as it used to take the time that we have right now to kind of reinvest in thinking about your approach to the market, whether that's revisiting your ideal customer profiles, re-looking at how you look at data, sitting down and putting communication plans so that sales and marketing can work more lockstep. This is the time to do it because I do feel like as things start to ramp up and we get out of this phase in business, that those that have taken the time to kind of reconfigure and really align their revenue engine are really going to perform better and those that don't really are going to put themselves at a significant disadvantage that they may not get out of for some time. So I am always open to answer any questions. I love talking to both heads of sales and head of marketing and CEOs that are struggling with this problem and trying to help them think it through and determining if there's a way that we can work together to help them move the needle with their organization. So again, I hope that you will check out meetjeffdavis.com and then any of the other resources that I produce and the content that I share on LinkedIn.
Wonderful. And thank you so much, Jeff, for joining us today. And for me, as well as for Manish, both of us are extremely grateful that you joined us today. And also, we took a lot of things away from this conversation, I'm sure. Same is the case for our listeners, too. And for all you guys, that's that from this episode from us. This is bye from me, Yagnishwaran Ganesh.
And this is bye from me, Manish. Take care.
Thanks, Davis.
There we go.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.